Blog this is Black Noise Radio.
Boom, 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 boom. Gonna shoot you right down. At all your feet. Take you home with me. Put you in my house. Boom, 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 boom. I love to see you walk up and down the floor. When you're talking to me, that baby talk. I like it like that. When you talk like that, you knock me dead. Right on my feet. How, 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 how. Talk and whisper in my ear. Tell me she love me. I love that talk, that baby talk. She knocks me dead right off my feet. How, 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 how. Yeah, yeah. Now, baby.
Atlantic, numerous blog reviews and other publications. He's also a former clerk for State Court. Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. He spent 6 years as a public defender in Washington, D.C., where he confronted many of the types of cases that he's written about in his book, Locking Up Our Own, Crime and Punishment in Black America. James, looking at photographs of the civil rights movement, particularly from the period of the early 60s or early 70s, there's disagree. How does the failures to fully realize the goals of the civil rights movement, how did that play into Black America being a part of the addiction to prosecution of Black individuals? How did America's addiction to mass incarceration, how is that promulgated by Black individuals and Black politicians in this landscape?
Well, I think, you know, one important kind of piece of the puzzle that we have to look at is how this is a system that developed in a series of very small steps, right? These incremental steps that were, some of them were even almost not even apparent to the people who were making the decisions at the time. So this is one of the challenges that I find in this book, right, is that I'm somebody who's extremely critical of what has happened in our criminal justice system, and yet I'm trying to write a history that looks at the world through the eyes of the people who were living it, right? Who, through the eyes of this first generation of African-American elected officials, and trying to kind of understand the challenges that they were facing. So one kind of example of what I'm talking about when I say these small steps of these unintended consequences is there was a huge debate in Washington, D.C., and it happened elsewhere too, but I write about it in D.C., about whether to decriminalize marijuana. So 1975, African American City Council, 11 Black members out of 13, come into, Mary Berry is one of them, and they come into power. And one of the first issues that somebody puts on their agenda is whether to decriminalize marijuana. Now, we know now, in 2017, the incredible damage that marijuana criminalization has had on our community, right? The lost jobs, the inability to get public housing, and the like. So you would think that this would have been an easy win, right, under one level. Actually, a white city council member, civil rights, a graduate of Howard Law School, a white guy, but a graduate of Howard Law School and a civil rights activist, Dave Clark, proposes decriminalizing marijuana. The opposition comes from Black ministers, and it comes from an African-American Black nationalist and minister on the city council by the name of Doug Moore. The fascinating thing to me about the opposition is that they care deeply about Black youth. Like they were, you can see it in their expression, the way they talk about our children. They say, listen, we live in a racist society. Doug Moore says this over and over again. Our society is racist, and Black children need all their wisdom out there if they're going to overcome racism in America. We don't have the luxury of getting high and still doing well in school. Our kids don't have all kind of resources for drug treatment programs and otherwise. So we have to stay clean if we are going to make it in America. So no, I'm not going to support marijuana decriminalization. So to me, that's a really good example of a situation where I think they made a mistake. I think we would have been better off if they had decriminalized marijuana in 1975, but I can understand the incredible pressure they were under and some of the reasons why, even out of love, they made the decision that they made. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but that's the kind of the tension and the complexity that I see in this story.
Please join us next week as we return with part two of our interview with James Foreman. Let's take a really short break, and we'll be right back.
Black Noise Radio.
Noise Radio, produced by DJ Monk for Blizzing Tank. Feel a deep mix of music and thoughts. Please feel loudly.
Thank you.
Radio. I'm your host, DJ Monk. We listened to, at the opening, John Lee Hooker with Stevie Ray Vaughan. Boom, boom, boom. Here You Go Again, Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers. Then we had a little insight into the plight of African Americana as we come up on this 25th anniversary of the LA Uprising, also called the LA Riots, from 1992 as a result of Rodney King and the conditions that still plague us today. You know, folks, all we want is a little piece.
One of my favorite compositions. This
one
is titled Everybody Loves the Sunshine.
And we want to let that light in. listen closely to Roy Ayers as he dedicates this song to Miles Davis when it was recorded. But this is the iconic Sunshine. We all want it, we all need it. Get you some if you can. Black Noise Radio will be back tomorrow, Sunday special edition.
Paying a special tribute to Miles with this composition, I'm going to give you the muted trumpet sound and try to come as close to the sound of Miles Davis as I possibly can. With all due respect to Miles Davis music, this is the Miles Davis sound right now.
Just bees and trees and flowers, folks. You know what? I'm going to have to shut that down. You know why? Because GRX is on the line when he got his own bees and trees and flowers.
G to the R to the X.
So
what's going on, people?
What you think about it? We got this riot thing coming up, the anniversary. It's everywhere, man. These folks is that's probably why the ratings spiked, because some of the local folks at KPFK are actually leading the information as we have that re-acknowledgement of what some called an uprising and some called a riot. We have something specific going to happen here on the 29th, I believe, and probably every weekend and every day henceforth on the corner of Florence and Vermont, a block from my house.
Yeah, well, I don't call it a riot.
It was truly an uprising, and we did feature some of what was going on. I tried to reach you earlier on what was going on. We played some of what other folk were playing that happened that day as they interviewed Chuck D, KRS-One, even sounded like a couple of artists that Ice-T was in that. In that little interview, and it goes all the way back to that day, and it's so prophetic because Chuck D was bold enough to say that it's going to take 10 to 15 years for African Americans in this community and all to work out their issues. And Chuck D was bold enough to say in 1992, hey, you need to look at Baltimore, you need to look at Chicago, you need to look at Detroit. It's all going off the hinges.
Well, you know, ours was just because we're in California first. You know what I'm saying? If it would have happened in some little small hick town, it would have been a blurb on the screen pretty much. But because it happened in California, in Los Angeles, and it shut the city down for, what, about a week or so? Yeah.
I would say it shut you down maybe physically so you couldn't get to work in a week, but
the effects lasted. They're still lasting. You can still go by in through the hoods and see the damage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm around the corner, bro. You up the street and in it too. This thing, it may have started over here, but it spread like wildfire.
Man, I was living in Long Beach at the time, and it made it all the way out there. So
I was living in Richmond or in the Bay Area at the time, working in Richmond at East Shore Community Center at work that time when this popped up on the screen. And I'm the assistant community center director, and these young brothers started acting way more ignorant than they normally act. So I'm like, what is going on? So then somebody said, well, Mr. Smith, did you tune in? And all breaking news. Boom. Then I see my mama's, I see it from the helicopter view. I see my house. I see my house on the news. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the corner and the liquor store and everything. I see everything, bro. So my thing was, let me call my mom. That was what happened. That's why, let me call my mom right from work. Because I had to put out so many fires that my young brothers and sisters was creating.
Yeah.
I mean, fires, Greg. They decided to chunk the coal that was cast into cement with stop signs, and they were attacking white people. And, you know, it got to a point, I'm like, well, what the hell? You know, I saw, and then I called my mother. She's like, these fools done lost their rabbit-ass mind. And then I realized there's a riot going on in my hood.
Right.
Then I see homies. I'm in the Bay, bro. I'm watching this with the NBC, CBS feed, and every other feed. They got the camera so up on, you know. I see everything, bro. I mean, it's, you know, all the little homies, all the big homies. I see it. But my main concern was, did my mother make it back from the gas station? She said they had her locked up in that, and she couldn't get out because they started the riot when she was trying to get gas.
Did your mama start the riot?
And then I thought about flying down.
Yeah, I stayed in Long Beach for that day when it first started, and then I worked my way towards my mom's house. And I saw a lot.
I mean, it's crazy, bro. And Brother Kiki and some key players, you know, some are majors now. So you know, we're on a whole nother level, but. It's coming up, bro. We'll deal with it. You know, sometimes I don't like going out because I don't want nothing to jump off and be caught up.
Right. But I went to go see my moms and stuff, so, you know.
Well, you know, I thought about getting in my car and driving down from the Bay during the riot, but I had a party coming up. Riot, like, jumped off, like, on Thursday or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And I had a party coming up on a Friday in San Francisco, and then I had to. Then it became a whole nother issue of should I get a party? And we didn't know if it was going to just be a nationwide sweep of. Who was president? George Bush?
Yep.
We didn't know, bro. It was just going to be just. Armored guards on everything, you know, just shut down, full shutdown. It was a weird time. all my constituents said, give the party, because we need to release. Even if we don't party, we need to just go somewhere and chill out. And it was that serious, and we did do that at a soul food party. And I think I cooked collard greens and may have added a little gumbo and cornbread just to make sure that they had everything they needed to keep their head on. You know, keep your wig on, bruh.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm concerned about is that we get back into some other type of reinsurgence of violence. And that's not going to help us. The other thing
not one bit.
Most concerned about is that while we don't want to celebrate that time period, we want to acknowledge it, right? And sometimes in acknowledging it, it becomes like this celebratory time to just get a 40 and a blunt. And that's not what this is about, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, we need to be smarter than just going to get a 40 and a blunt. You know, we need to look at what really happened and what's still happening today to us here in Lost South, as they call it now, all of South Central.
Yeah. Los Angeles has become South Central.
Right.
It's only a matter of a couple of years and a couple of dirty actors in media prominence to just to declare that north of Jefferson is South L.A.
Right. From Culver City back down to, what is it, Alameda? It's South Central. Well, put it like this, where anywhere there's a resemblance of a gang is South Central.
Or people of color, be even clearer.
Right.
It's just
right.
How that thing gonna work. And that's just how that thing going to go down. We need to get off the air, bro. We're over time, and I am going to be on the air tomorrow, and you are welcome to get on and get on the Winnebago, because these shows
right.
Is a big Winnebago. The problem is trying to stop and pull over to pull up, or, you know, get a taco at the car. You know, it's hard to park that Winnebago. Or to just visit my local weed club. You know, you can't park the Winnebago at the weed spot. You're going to bring attention to you. So
Right.
You know, as we roll the Winnebago, you know, we ain't rolling too fast either. And then you get problems because you ain't rolling fast enough. What's the Winnebago, officer? Well, I never thought about that. Huh.
Yeah, I was just trying to creep on through.
Yeah, you know, never mind the weed smoke. Never, that's DRX. That had nothing to do with me. He ain't driving.
That's why he in the back.
I don't believe in secondhand. Nothing. Sex, smoke, none of that. Secondhand, nothing. I want my shit firsthand. Okay?
I know that's right.
That's why I don't eat pork. Huh? I'm going to leave that alone. I got to let you go, bro. I can't talk to you every day like this because you know what?
All right, bro.
You're getting smarter every day. I gotta watch you, boy. I thought you was out there stealing my car last night. Well, I got to watch this brother. I grew up with him. He knows something about my hood and his.
Because we hung out.
Unfortunately, or thank God.
Thank God.
Yeah,
divine intervention.
Yeah, divine Jesus intervention. I'm gonna roll with that because you and I've been in tough spots. That the average brother today, you're gonna get killed.
Right, we've been there.
You're gonna get killed by your own people because you called.
Right.
You make me laugh too much. That way, that means I need to go get me a little nip of vodka, just to get my Jesus back on track. You see, you know.
Look, your Jesus never left you. See, that's the problem right there. See,
I never said it left me, but I told you as a minister, you cannot be in the pulpit preaching if you ain't sinned enough. You ain't got nothing to talk to these people about. They done been peeling the post. You over here talking about just say no. And you never said yes? Oh, fool. get out of here. I'm out, G.
All right, later.